Hey everybody, it's Matt. This episode of Growing Greater, it's made possible thanks to the support that we receive from WSFS Bank, from Comcast, and from the law firm of Ballard Spahr. And as we kick off this, our third season of Growing Greater, let's thank the team at WSFS Bank. They're actually helping us attract new companies and new jobs to our region. We stand for service. That's what WSFS Bank is all about. And you know, their friends, they call them WSFS, and they are the seventh oldest continuously operating bank in the United States, a permanent fixture in our community. WSFS is a service-oriented, locally managed community banking institution with professionals who have been helping businesses of all sizes, as well as growing families with a wide range of banking services. And they continue to implement innovative tactics to streamline personal and business banking. Learn more at WSFSBank.com and join me in thanking WSFS Bank for their support of our Growing Greater podcast.
This is Growing Greater. Growing Greater. Bringing you the stories of economic growth, job creation, and business success from across the 11-county community of northern Delaware, southern New Jersey, and southeastern Pennsylvania. Now, here's Matt Gabry.
Where we are at this moment is in our retail store. So obviously we come from our background. We started this model in North Philadelphia in a warehouse, fourth floor of an old window factory. So when we're up there, we didn't have a retail store. But as we knew that we were coming here to the Fashion District, you know, they're expecting over 25 million people a year to walk through here.
Right.
We knew a lot of our members were selling physical products. So to be able to take advantage of that foot traffic and build this space, everything you see here was created by a local creator in our region. So literally, you know, about 18 of our members are currently selling out here. You'll see some Philly Who podcast merchandise, some Tierra Whack merchandise, who's an artist here in the city, all that sit on top of our coffee shop. So again, you know, 95% of the people that come, they shop in our retail store, they buy coffee, they never will actually see what we're about to go see in the back. So when our members sign up, they get one of these member cards, the key to the castle, and then they actually download our actual rec app, and that's how they'll actually book all these studios that I'll show you in a moment.
Cool.
It's one thing to have a great idea, but it's another thing to bring that idea to life. We've all likely been there at one point in our personal or professional lives. You have a great idea. Now what? How do we activate that idea? In order to realize a dream, to transform an idea from concept to reality, having access to resources, to a space where you can create and incubate and grow, it is crucial.
You want to just jump in a few?
Sure.
Give you a tour?
Good.
Just watch your step as you come in.
Ooh, double door.
For sure.
What up, Dante?
I don't
know, you started already. Is it cool if we just take a quick peek?
Awesome.
On this episode of Growing Greater, we take you behind the scenes of one of the newest, most sought-after locations for people with ideas, creatives of all types, right here in Greater Philadelphia. And it's known as Rec Philly. It's a 10,000 square foot state-of-the-art space strategically positioned in the heart of Center City, Philadelphia at 9th and Market Streets. The space and the overall concept, it's really unique, providing affordable, reliable access to a vast toolkit that creators need in order to deliver on their dreams. So, resources for every creator. That's what REC stands for. It's a membership organization that can best be described as a gymnasium for creatives. From recording studios, a visual lab, performance space, a podcast studio, a design studio, editing suites, community workspace, meeting spaces, and even access to legal and financial experts, and so much more, REC Philly has it all for their members to grow and to thrive. We connected with co-founders Will Toms and Dave Silver. That's who we heard at the top of the program as they guided us through a tour of this engaging and welcoming space. And we learned about their inspiration for REC Philly and how they transformed their idea into the dynamic organization that it is today. We gathered, very appropriately, in the podcast studio of REC Philly. And here, Will describes the first time he ever met his co-founder, Dave Silver.
Yeah, so the first time I met Dave Silver was in high school. So
our last names being really close to each other in the alphabet, Tom's Silver. One year, I believe it was, what, sophomore year? Yeah, I think it was sophomore year. We had about three classes together. That was junior year? Yeah, okay.
Just wasn't sure which one.
Oh, got it. And I remember the first important time that I met Dave, because he kind of just sat next to me. You know, he's kind of quiet kid, kind of goofy. We had a class project that we worked on in chemistry class, and took on this class project. And at some point, we had to do some sort of experiment, and we just decided, cool, we're going to do this experiment, but more importantly, we're going to make a video about this experiment.
Cool.
And we're both kind of interested in the media realm of things. And doing that project was, I think, our way of, one, getting to know each other and kind of like getting to know each other's passions, and also like, yo, you come from a whole different world of things than I do, and vice versa. So I think we kind of built a lot of respect for each other through that. And I don't know if we did very well on the project itself, but I know we had an incredible time doing it and realized our working styles were super complementary to each other. And yeah, that was it. And I think after that, we were like, yo, we both really like this media thing. We really like kind of hanging out and the way we were able to create something really cool. And I think that was the start of continuing to create cool things for the next decade.
Yeah. At least.
Right.
Yeah, I'll really never forget. Just like, I remember watching our friendship happen in my room as we re-edited the science project video.
Mentos and soda.
Yeah, it was what happens if you put Mentos and soda. And we literally would throw the sodas and like it would explode in the air. And I remember going back in my house, and we were both sitting on computer chairs in my little room, and we were like selecting like music to play. Like, what will the soda be exploding to? And there's the song, boom, here comes the boom. Yeah. And I just remember, like, just bonding over, like, we're playing the song and, like, the explosions are happening. And we're just, like, we really just enjoyed the production of it. Yeah, I remember that was, like, corny style of, like, yeah, this is, like, I'm, like, getting a friend. Which is, for me, a very different, like, I grew up having, and this is really about me right now, is Will's thing, but
yeah, it's okay.
I was like in Jewish youth organizations growing up. Like, I always had like just a pocket of like Jewish friends. That was like my friend group for years.
Right.
And always like admiring, Will was like a popular kid in school. I was not a popular kid in school.
Right.
And always like admired Will of like having so many friends, and everyone knew Will and this and that. And then here I'm like in my like Jewish clique that like no one really talks to other than like the Jewish people and the thing.
So that moment that you guys were in science class together, and you got either paired together or you chose to work together in the science project, that was a pretty big deal for you, Dave, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Seriously.
It was, you know, going out into a world that, you know, I never really connected with someone that had such a different background than I did.
Right.
I just kind of knew what I knew and from the community in which I knew it and like how those families grew up and how, you know, what your hobbies were and things of that nature. And then here comes Will from it, just a totally different direction with a whole other friend group.
Right.
And that was way more aligned to like what I actually cared about. I don't even remember like things I like had a passion for before, really. Not necessarily before I met Will, but like once my friendship with Will started happening, I was like, wow, I love this media stuff. Like, I didn't even realize how much I enjoyed it.
Right. Yeah, you had an interest in it.
Yeah.
And now it's evolving into more than just an interest, it sounds like. Yeah. And I know this is going to be really nuanced, but I want to dive into this just a little bit and ask, you know, when you're working on this science project, the Mentos in the soda bottle and how it reacts, right? And you had this idea to, you know, bring this kind of experiment to life with a video. Do you remember, was that your idea, Dave? Was it your idea of Will? Or was it like you both were like, how about we do a video? And that kind of simple kind of little bonding thing brought it even to the next step.
I have no idea.
I think Will and I were, like, I was goofy, and like Will, super cool dude. And we both didn't like science. Like, we both like didn't want to be in this class. And like, I just knew we both like looked at each other. We're like, yeah, we're just going to do something different.
Yeah.
Right.
We're not going to do what they think we're going to do. We're not going to do what's usually done.
Right.
And who knows whose idea or what, but we knew that like it would be super cool to look at.
Yep.
And we're like, all right, we'll definitely create a visual for this.
And we walked back into the science class and said, hey, we made a music video.
I literally, I can put myself in my mind of us standing in front of the class playing it and then it ending. And then, like, everyone kind of just, like, specifically looking at the teacher.
Right.
And he's like, what was that? That wasn't what the assignment was.
Well,
and we're like, here's the data. Because it was all about the data like, what the experiment was. And we're like, here's all the made-up data. We made up all the data.
Right.
Because we just spent all of our time.
Yeah, it got fizzy.
Yeah.
And then you see what happens when X hits Y. And
you
then
see
you,
it.
yeah, you see what happens from there.
Well, it wasn't just any music video, though. It was a scientific music video.
Yeah.
it is.
Right? It's all in the positioning.
Bill Nye would have been proud.
That's right. That's right. So this is a little bit of a trick question, Dave, that I'm going to ask you now.
Yeah.
Share with us the first time you met Will Toms.
Meeting him versus knowing him, again, coming from just like not being in the cool crowd, always like kind of aspiring, like, wow, it'd be so cool if I was on the catwalk with like these kids at the end. At the end of the day, like all the cool kids are over there and here I am like, you know, just waiting. I remember just, that is like what I remember of just like the kids at the school dance, right?
Right. And
like,
you were aware of this kind
of. Yeah, I'm like, oh, there's like Wu-Tang Will, right?
Sure.
Like the dancer, super great dancer, super, super dressed, matching the hat to the shoes, to the to the shirt, to the shoelaces. Like,
yeah, Will, he had it going on.
Yeah, literally had it going on. And like,
thing.
I was like, okay. But it was from our, it was actually just very odd. Just like, now that here we are, just like thinking of just like how the world put us in so many classes together.
Yeah.
There was no one who had more classes than Will and I. It was almost like a joke. I was like, yep, you're in another one of my classes.
Yeah, right.
I bet you I'll probably see you in my next class because like, and there he is. And we would always literally sit very close to each other because in high school, you're almost always assigned seats based on your name.
Right. So you were always sitting in front of Will.
Always,
generally
pretty
speaking,
pretty much next to him.
Next to him, okay, yeah.
Or very, very close. And I think we bonded in those classes.
Yeah.
And then we were a part of our school announcements. Again, it's another place where him and I both had interest and we just found ourselves doing that same thing.
I'll tell you where I'm going with this. You know, so Dave Silver, born and raised in Warminster, Bucks County.
I was born in Richboro and then moved in second grade to Bucks County.
And how far away is that, like 10 miles?
Yeah, it's they're both in Bucks County, so born and raised in Bucks County.
And you still would have been in the Warminster, or rather the William Tennant High School, if you stayed in Richboro, do you think?
No,
or not necessarily, okay. No. Just curious, and I'll tell you why. So born in Richboro, you're 7 years old, your family moves 10 miles away to Warminster, new school district, and Will, you were not born and raised in Bucks County.
Mm-mm.
You were born in Germantown neighborhood of Northwest Philadelphia.
Yep.
And how old were you? Take us back to that environment and how old you were when you moved to Bucks County and how big a deal that was.
Yeah, it was a huge deal. So, you know, and it wasn't one of those things where my family was just like, hey, let's just move, right? You know, there was a lot of just like early childhood things that were happening in my family that led my grandmother who raised me to say, hey, like, I really want to make sure that, you know, we can get you to an environment that's really going to allow you to tap into all of your potential. So, you know, when I was really young, I was probably around 5 or 6. And, you know, unfortunately, one of my uncles was murdered, you know, in the Germantown section of the city.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had a father who was then incarcerated and all those things were happening with our family. My grandmother was just like, yo, this kid is bright. If I can just get him to a school district with access to education and opportunity, you know, there could literally be a beautiful ending to this story.
Right.
She was right.
Yeah.
So then I think it was middle school. So like getting ready to transition about sixth grade or so, it was like, hey, let's go to this school, Log College Middle School, and we'll see how that whole thing happens. And I don't know if anyone gets in trouble for this, but there was like a lot of my life where I was still in Philadelphia, but I was getting out to the school system in Warminster.
Yep.
And then eventually we made the full shift and it was a huge deal. It was a big culture shock, you know? Just coming from the inner city school district to Warminster, I was the only kid who looked like me in most of my classes, right? So I was dealing with a lot of that and trying to figure out what that looked like for me and what the norms were.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've always been a bit of a social butterfly, so I think quickly kind of folks gravitated towards me, and I, as you guys said, had it going on in certain ways, I definitely stood out.
So how old were you when you officially kind of started your educational career in the Bucks County school system?
I think I got like actually like rooted in it and I was living there, going to school there. I was probably about 12.
Okay.
Right? I guess is that where you are at sixth grade?
Sixth or seventh grade. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I'm asking because I'm a big fan of milestone moments in our lives. Mm-hmm. And you've had a couple, and I would count that as one of them, and a couple others clearly before that, with a lot of influence from your grandmother, even influence from your dad, whether it was intentional or not, it certainly influenced you for sure and your uncle. And the milestone moment here is if your grandmother didn't have the creative approach to helping you and positioning success opportunities for you, you never would have met Dave Silver.
That's correct.
And that's not lost on me. And I'm sure it's not lost on you guys. And I think about those intersections in our lives that come across that sometimes, you know, you can take for granted. You know, it could just be this goofy kid down the aisle named Dave who, you know, you never gave him a second thought and you went on your way to the dance or to the sporting event or whatever it was you were doing. And your nurturing of that relationship never would have blossomed into not only a friendship, but a business as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you guys think about that?
Yeah, not super often, but I always think about just like, where we crossed. I think about like us being in the same class a lot and like why that happened a lot, right? Even if like it wasn't based on last name on who got paired on that assignment and it was, you could choose your partner. I don't know if we would have chose each other.
Right.
So a lot of those
serendipity moments.
And I think that like that happened multiple times where it was like, you know, there was the science project, right, that brought us together and then we started to build our friendship. But then, you know, we went away to different colleges, right?
Right.
And I think a lot of folks, their experiences, hey, I have my friend group in high school, but once I go to college, splits off, different interests, right? You grow apart. But that didn't happen with us, right? I was halfway across the state, you know, near Pittsburgh at IUP, and Dave was here at Temple.
Yeah.
But we were still, you know, getting on Skype and writing business plans together and being like, yo, we could do this and do that.
Summers, we were super locked in.
Yeah.
Like, always, the summers of college were like our entrepreneurial beginnings of like, we're working on business plans for clothing companies and event companies every summer.
Yeah.
And that was when we spent most of the time in our cars just, you know, just trying to figure things out.
Makes sense. So you're referencing some of this, and I want to fast forward to your junior, senior year at William Tenen High School in Bucks County, Warminster. Did you know what you wanted to do next? Well, you had referenced heading off to Indiana University of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Is that where you went?
Yep.
And Dave, you ended up at Temple University. You know, take us on that journey of, I'm a senior, I'm starting to apply to college. Do I want to go to college? Is college even right for me? And did you guys, one, talk about that, or did you just start to kind of pursue different avenues in life?
Yeah. So when we think about this era of our high school career, I always think about Planet Fitness.
Yeah, I always think about Planet Fitness.
Right?
Yeah.
And the reason I think about that is because I think Dave and I both knew, one, we were going to go to college, right? We're going to do that thing. But we knew really early on that we wanted to build something. You know, it wasn't like, hey, we're going to go to college and then we're just going to get these jobs and that's just going to be the thing. And I think we both were really clear on like, we don't know exactly what we're going to build, but we're going to build something that was going to allow us to stay close to the creativity.
Mm-hmm.
It was going to allow us to just be around the creative energy. We'd be able to produce things. And we always knew right next to that and underneath that, we always wanted to do something that was purposeful.
Right.
Right. It was really important that it was like, yo, this is about impact. This is about doing things differently. And this is about, you know, creating the lives for ourselves and others to live through that passion and through that purpose.
Right.
And I remember just doing the reps in Planet Fitness.
We're doing sit-ups.
Sit-ups.
Nice. Yeah,
second floor of Planet Fitness.
Yeah. Nice.
Very much that being a milestone moment of what are we going to do, you know, after college? Like, what's our goal?
Right.
I'm sitting here, he's holding my feet and I'm going up in the air and then I'm switching it up.
Yeah.
And I remember just like something like production, music, entertainment, but we're going to change the game.
Yeah.
We're going to change the world. And that was something that we always wanted to do.
Nice. Before we get to post-college and how you guys came together, I do want to pause here for a second and Dave, ask you, and I have another thought, Will, that I want to come back to. Talk with us a little bit about, Dave, your kind of family environment. You know, were they creative folks who were hanging out in your kitchen and your dining room and your living room on a regular basis? Were you influenced by your parents or your siblings, your grandparents in any way?
So my dad has been an entrepreneur my whole life. He's owned a roofing company since I was born. So I think that I have that entrepreneurial blood in me. My mom, her creative side is she's been in theater since I was a little kid. I was like drug into being like a munchkin in The Wizard of Oz.
I can see that.
And the background of Hello Dolly and the background of Grease and just...
You never told me the munchkin story.
Yeah, I was a munchkin. I was the music man. I was playing the flute in the music man band. And that was really the only creative thing that was happening within my family. There's very minimal music. You know, I grew up just listening to Bruce Springsteen and Yes in my dad's car and then Broadway and Frank Sinatra and my mom's. And like, that was my life growing up.
So that's actually a good combination of, you know, the entrepreneurial kind of spirit that your dad brought to the table and that creative theatrical passion that your mom brought to the table kind of mashed together and created this munchkin named Dave Silver.
I guess that's what happened.
It's kind of what I heard.
Never really analyzed it like that, but I guess that's very funny.
Will, is your grandmom still with us?
Yes, absolutely. She's alive and kicking.
Absolutely.
Yep. Nice. And I suspect she's still a big influence in your family.
Huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, my grandmother's always been my biggest champion. And I think growing up, she's always had a huge entrepreneurial spirit, you know, and always super creative, you know. And, you know, I think one, that's just like being able to turn her life experience into something positive, right? She's dealt with a lot. She's like probably one of the strongest women I've ever met. But you'd never know it by meeting her because of how big and bubbly and loving her personality is, you know? So I grew up with a lot of that energy, you know, come from just like tons of love in that regard. And then on top of that, like watching her just like craft things. Like, she's very well dressed, right? And like, she's always creating hats. When we go to church, she'd be like designing her old outfits, and just like, you know, all around our crib was just like knickknacks that she's painting figurines.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, so I learned a lot of just like that craftsmanship and that kind of expression from her.
I love that because, you know, you observed how your grandmother carried herself, how she interacted with other people, how she appeared and how she cared about how she appeared. And that clearly, I think, translates to some of your interactions and some of your thought process.
So I won best dress in high school.
That's right. Yeah. That was the matching shoelaces.
That's it. That was a real thing.
That's such a real thing.
I love
it. Oh, man.
So I want to shift gears because, you know, clearly this may sound a little serendipity as well, or I should say a little Pollyanna, in that relationships take a lot of work, whether it's a friendship, a business partnership, a marriage, or a professional relationship, whatever kind of relationship category you want to implement here. It takes work, you know, and it takes kind of a concentrated effort. And one of the things I've observed, and again, maybe you guys weren't thinking about it this way, is, you know, a friendship blossoms into a lifelong connection with somebody, or it doesn't. But you got to work at it if it's going to advance. And I want to fast forward to, I guess, your senior years of college. You're at two different places, but you're still staying connected, it sounds like, over the summers. How did you ultimately come to this place where you settled on, let's create this thing? And was that thing Rec Philly, or was it something else? And then you had three other kind of initiatives before you kind of hit that traction point of Rec Philly.
Yeah. So I think serendipity played a lot as a theme throughout this whole thing. And the thing was, at each of our colleges, Dave and I were both like throwing events, right? And like doing artistic things and really just creating platforms for our friends who are artists to just express themselves. So at the time, Dave was already doing what it was called the Broad Street Music Lounge out of his fraternity basement in North Philly.
Yep.
And coming home, he was like working closely with our other best friend who was an artist, and they were moving some things forward. And when I had came home, it was a couple, it was about a semester early. And as soon as I got back to Philly, it was like, okay, cool. Well, how do we take this to the next level? And how do I add, you know, my value add to this whole system? And at that point, it was like, okay, I can bring some media, you know, to what's happening with Dave already booking talent in the basement of his fraternity house. And over time, the Broad Street Music Lounge went from just being in the fraternity basement, and we said, yeah, let's take this to real venues around the city.
Yep.
And then we formed what we called together the Broad Street Music Group. And that was just this, hey, booking, we're going to throw events, and we're going to create, you know, media for the artists that we worked with and things like that. And that's where we really started to uncover the problem that we eventually became solving with Rec Philly.
Gotcha.
You know, throwing five shows a week, you know, at certain times. And it was like, hey, we're working with, you know, almost thousands of artists, and we were realizing that all the best and brightest kept believing in this narrative of, I got to go to New York or LA to get to the next step.
Right.
Right.
And there was a lot of talent out there.
Tons.
And it needed some sort of, and probably still does to a certain extent, some sort of kind of structure, if you will, and some sort of avenue to channel their talent into something more than just, you know, a gig on a Friday night.
Yeah.
When we were up in North Philly, we had a stage that we built by hand. I literally helped build this platform, right? So we had a really intimate space.
We'll call it a riser.
Yeah, literally it was a riser, right?
It was about the size of that piece of wood on pegs.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that was our stage. I think we built two of them.
Two of them.
And I was always very worried when people were rocking out that they would just break. And like literally break and then fall through the floor, because the floors seemed like they'd break at any minute as well. But that was our concert venue.
As we navigate through the new Rec Philly space, we can actually feel the sparks of possibility, the enthusiasm emanating from the creators who call this space their workshop. Watch out for me, I'm about to glow. Move with purpose, and my favorite, independent, doesn't mean alone. These are just a few of the encouraging and positive messages proudly displayed throughout the thoughtfully and professionally designed space.
I'm kind of pop our hood in here, and this is just another recording studio, so we've kind of went through it, but this is like our professional master studio. We ended up, you know, as a common thing you'll hear as well is the partnerships that we've built, whether it's Ballard or Wisfus. This room in particular, a partnership with Solid State Logic, who is the manufacturer of high-end recording consoles.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is what you'll find if you go to, you know, a superstar's recording studio is, is stuff like this. Yeah. But when we met with them and we pitched them the idea that we were doing this, the idea that artists who are just getting started out or are just really locally based and are on the journey to get to where most of these superstars are, they don't get to engage with their brand until a certain point in their career. And they were really hoping that they could help bridge the gap and be there for them prior, and they didn't have many outlets to do that. And so when we told them about our space, they're like, hey, we want a board in this space so your members can have access to it. This piece of equipment is about $40,000.
I was gonna ask about that.
Yeah, this was gifted to us from them. It's not like they gave us a discount. They're literally gifted to us, and they just were here yesterday doing a training on how to use it for our members.
Will and Dave have created something special. Sure, it's access to top-tier equipment and tools. They even provide access to experts for financial and legal guidance. And perhaps, even more importantly, Will and Dave have built a community where innovators and creatives from all walks of life and all industries can learn from each other and secure the support they need to thrive. It's a place where talented people gather, folks who perhaps would have otherwise traveled to other parts of the country or the world to develop their dream, or even worse, talent that would have potentially slumbered in their basements, those unrealized and rudderless artists and creators and entrepreneurs who may not have known where to turn to fulfill their dreams were it not for Rec Philly. And speaking of talented professionals who provide expert advice and guidance, let's pause for a moment to thank the team at Ballard Spar for their support of this podcast and their active engagement with Rec Philly. With deep, proud roots anchored firmly in Philadelphia for more than 130 years, the Ballard Spar team, which today consists of more than 650 attorneys in 15 offices, they are known for their ability to respond wherever and whenever their clients need them. Ballard attorneys provide results-driven counsel and exceptional service in the areas of litigation, business and finance, real estate, intellectual property, public finance, and so much more. In addition to their hallmark of responsiveness, the firm's mission and values, known as the Ballard Way, they are fundamental distinguishing characteristics of this iconic Philadelphia law firm that today has a national reach and prominence across the U.S. Learn more at BallardSpar.com and join me in thanking Ballard Spar for their support of our Growing Greater podcast. Now let's get back to our conversation with Will and Dave of Rec Philly.
So, Dave, take us back. What year was that for the Broad Street Music Lounge and when it evolved into the next phase? And take us to that moment of when you came up with this, you know, more structured type of space on North 9th Street that was the first home of Rec Philly.
Yeah. You know, it dates back to 2011, 2012. I was the social chairman of the organization that I was a part of. Mm-hmm. So I was responsible for all the parties, all the nightlife. You know, I was staffing, DJ, drinks, like who's doing what, who's getting in, who's not. And that kind of gave me the ability to call the shots on what social programming we were having in our house. When I was a freshman, I saw a concert thrown in my fraternity house. That opened my eyes to like what's possible. I'm like, oh, I didn't realize that we could do this. So I volunteered because my best friends were hip hop artists, you know, while we were in high school, and that's what we were doing in the car back in the parking lot, was just freestyling. So I'm like, if I throw the next concert, if I like volunteer to do that, can I like book the show? And that was like, in 2011 was the first show. It was before any business or anything. I just threw a show before the parties would start to book my friends. And that was the beginning inspiration for what could happen with the resources that were available to us. Come 2012, still social chairman, I did 3 out of 4 years in college because I really love to do it, was when I said, can I do this more often? Mm-hmm. I actually couldn't afford to be in the fraternity anymore. So I said, can I do it to pay my dues for the fraternity? Can we charge at the door, and anything after my dues will go to a philanthropy? Mm-hmm. And that gave me the green light to turn the basement into just some sort of venue from 7 to 9 p.m. on Thursday nights.
Nice.
And I'd book my friends. I'd put flyers around campus, and people would come down and do that. And that's when Will would come up from college and be like, yo, I'll videotape it. Yo, we'll grab photos. And that was before really there was any business at stake.
Right.
I just had to call the venue something more than what the house, like the address.
Yeah.
So we called it the Broad Street Music Lounge.
Yeah.
And we get pizza, and I was an intern for like three different companies. We'd bring free products down, energy shots, drinks, things like that.
Little cross promotion.
Yeah, a little cross promotion, this and that. And that was the beginning stages of the Broad Street Music Lounge. And like what Will said is eventually we actually got kicked out of the basement because we got press that this was happening. Yep. And our landlord's like, you can't do this in my basement. Right. You can't be running this business.
Right.
So we actually stopped and we're like, all right, we're not going to do anything. But, you know, what's next? And then 6 months later, we're like, there was actually something really special happening. And we had a list of 80 artists that reached out to get booked. And I thought that was gold at the time. 80 artists and their information. I went to clubs, went to venues, and I got 80 artists and I got free drinks for my internship. I can do an event here.
But in fairness, Dave, at that point in your career, that was gold.
That was gold. No, it literally was gold. And I was sold it was gold. Yeah. And venues agreed to allow us to say, hey, give me your any night of the week that you're not having business. I'll come in and I'll throw a good show.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we did. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, every week while I was still in school.
Yeah.
We would throw a different show at a different venue with different artists of all different genres. Mm-hmm. We'd sometimes add live art into it. We'd had a cellist. We had a metal band. We had hip-hop artists. And it was all in the same lineup, the same night. Most of those venues don't even exist in Philadelphia anymore. They've shut down since.
Right.
And that was the beginning.
Yeah.
And
they were the seeds that were planted. Yeah.
And when, really what was happening there is we were developing our names in the community of the folks who were doing things for artists in a professional manner, right? It was really hard as a hip hop artist in Philly to get on a showcase, and it wasn't 4 hours delayed and you didn't get paid, and like it didn't even happen at all. There wasn't good promotion for it. We did everything pretty much right by the books.
Yeah.
And that was very unusual in like the independent hip hop world.
Yeah.
And that was the name that we started. Good content from our media team, good show production from our production team. And that was what we did. And we ended up throwing close to 500 shows, maybe between 300 and 500 shows before we kind of got tired of it.
Yeah.
And when we thought about where our business would go, like, do we just want to be competing with Live Nation to throw shows?
Right.
And at this point, we're just finishing school, and Will and I live together in South Philly, and we operated out of our basement.
And did you have this moment of, all right, so Will graduates, you graduate. Do you have this moment of, so now what? Or did you have this moment of, all right, so this is kind of what we're doing?
Yeah, kind of. And I think, you know, the next pivotal moment for me that comes to mind is the Chickies and Pete's parking lot.
what happened in the Chickies and Pete's parking lot?
Well, we both had jobs at Chickies and Pete's.
Oh, nice.
And that was before we both had our like corporate job.
Yeah.
We went through strings of jobs where in similar paths, which was interesting.
Crazy.
But we both worked at South Philly. You went to the Parks location for a bit, but we were both like gamers in like the gaming section of Chickies and Pete's that they have.
Sports bar.
And I remember we were really having a tough time figuring out what we were going to do next as a business. Yeah. We also had a third partner, and we were having challenges with that third partner, because he was an Orthodox Jew and couldn't work on Friday nights and Saturdays, and that was very challenging in the entertainment business.
Entertainment company.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And we were like burning ourselves out, right?
Yeah.
Just doing so much. And then we, you know, made the decision. We're like, yo, we can't keep doing this way. And I think we both agreed. We're like, yo, we could be way more impactful to the people that we care about serving than just putting people on stages. And we agreed to shut the business down and then come up with the next thing.
Yeah.
So we did that, and, you know, later on became, I think, one of the next pivotal moments of just like, I remember the phone call of just being like, and I remember at this point in time, we had already went ahead and secured a space in this Window Factory building. Got introduced to it because one of our best friends was a recording artist. He found a studio that he was working out of in this building, put this whole building on the map for us. And we were like, yo, we're figuring this next thing out. We need to lower our expenses, right? So let's just figure out how we could get a space of our own that we could just put all our tools there, you know, still producing video content.
Yeah.
He needed a recording studio so he didn't have to keep going to someone else and paying by the hour.
Right.
You know, we were kind of all going in and funding that. So we're like, yo, we can't keep doing it. So we had a 600 square foot room in this warehouse.
Yeah.
And I remember just sleeping on the couch there one night, and like it was literally raining through the ceiling in this couch. And just had a moment of reflection, and I was just like, yo, space.
Right.
And again, the context is Dave and I were throwing all these events, going all around the city, always trying to find new venues and like doing this thing. And I remember calling Dave and I was like, yo, Dave, so you ready to be a millionaire?
Nice.
And he goes, yep. And I was like, space. It's like everything we're doing, it all really just comes down to like, we need a centralized space to, you know, have a space for us as creatives to just express ourselves and have access to the tools that we need and be able to have the conversations that we're having to educate ourselves, to build the business models and things like that. And that was like the biggest turning point, going from the old business model. And that was the very beginning of Rec.
So that was the phone call you just referenced. Was you're in this space on North 9th Street, 9th and Dolphin?
9th and Dolphin.
Roof is leaking, you're on the couch. Mm-hmm. You have this kind of moment of, I got it.
Yeah,
we need space. We need to structure this.
And first, it was more of a why am I here?
Yeah,
why am I sleeping on this couch?
Right.
Why am I around here? And these tools are here, and all that stuff.
And then the phone call to Dave kind of started the concept, shaping it into more of a reality.
Yeah,
cool. Two part question, and I'll start with you, Dave. How do you describe to the average person Rec Philly?
I like to use the kind of analogy that we're like a gym, but for artists, right? We provide the space and the tools and the resources that if you're an artist and you have these talents and passions, we have the place to work out just creatively.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also a two-part company, though. So we are the space, but we also run a creative agency that helps employ our members for jobs around the city. And we're able to, you know, offer all of our members when they join our program, they add to the creative services that we offer as an agency. So we're this like boutique agency that offers musicians and DJs and videographers and photographers and podcasters and editors. And we can be kind of the bridge between the corporate and the culture of Philadelphia.
Nice. Will, what does Rec Philly stand for? Does it have a meaning behind it?
Yeah. So Rec, the Rec in Rec Philly is Resources for Every Creator.
R-E-C.
REC. And that really just speaks to, you know, I believe that we've built a model that connects folks to everything they need to build sustainable businesses around their passion. And that starts with the tools. The next part is, you know, just as important. It's the education, right? It's really to say, hey, how does this actually look? If I want to be an independent creator, what are the business building principles I need to understand? And then third, I think is the most important that often gets looked over is just the community, right? The supportive community of folks who are like-minded that are on similar journeys and, you know, are going to be able to, you know, support you in the highs and lows and, you know, connect to when you need other folks to collaborate with and things like that.
Yeah. Where will Rec Philly be in the next 3 years, the next 5 years, the next 10 years?
So company is Rec. So when we think about Rec Philly, Rec, and then fill in the blank, and that's where we're going to be in the next 3 years. Our plan is to have 4 total locations. Within the next 2 years, we want to be open in 3 new cities.
Mm-hmm.
And we're starting to target those cities now and figure out what communities need what we offer. You know, what communities have the problem that we're solving? And we do believe that it's many of them, and it's not just in the United States. Mm-hmm. We believe this to be a global problem of access to resources as a creative entrepreneur.
And Rec's the solution.
And Rec is the solution. We want to serve 100,000 creators over the next 10 years and have over 30 locations in the next 10 years.
I love the specificity of the goal because it's a great thing to work towards.
Yeah, we're very aligned in where we're going. Our whole team knows that goal. We have a timeline set out. We have a plan in place. And this space, this flagship location, was the beginning marker for what we're looking to accomplish. We just want to create the playbook here and what works really well. You know, those things that we had in mind that we probably didn't realize that, oh, they needed it differently. We needed this many rooms or that many rooms, or credits work this different way. So
mm-hmm.
we're figuring that out over the next few months. And then we're ready to take that playbook, formalize it, and launch it into other cities.
That's the plan. That's the vision.
So this question is for both of you guys. There's a young person at William Tennant High School, or maybe in an elementary school in the Germantown neighborhood of Philadelphia, mm-hmm. or in the Warminster area, or maybe they're a student at Temple, or maybe they're in the military today, or they're thinking about what their next journey in life is going to be, whether it's vocational or some other kind of industry sector that they're trying to channel. And in the spirit of our program, Growing Greater, what kind of advice do you give to a young person who comes to you and says, wow, you have brought something to life that really resonates with me? Maybe it doesn't even resonate with them, but they admire how you've taken an idea and transformed it into reality. So what kind of guidance, feedback, advice do you give to a young person who seeks you out to ask about kind of personal and professional growth?
I'd say find your tribe. I think that's the most important part. You know, find the person or the few folks that are like-minded and you guys can align on where you want to go and what you really want to do, right? And stay close to that energy, because I think there's a lot of folks who want to go do ambitious things, but if you don't have the right people around you to kind of affirm that, and especially on the off days, right, I think it becomes really challenging, because this is a game of consistency and this is a game of endurance, and to have the right people around you to continually kind of be those mirrors to help you grow and improve, but also just like be that sounding board and that support system is invaluable.
Yeah. I think it's okay that you don't know what you're doing. And I think a lot of people are so scared because they don't know what to do. I think it's just important that you go do something and do a lot of different things, you know, from high school to college to even when we were business owners, we were just always doing a bunch of different things to see what we really loved, what really stuck. You know, throw it against the wall. What stays up there is maybe worth doing. Once you're committed to it, there's a couple of core like business principles I really stick by. That's the art of the follow-up, right? People are just so busy. You can't think that anything's personal. So just, you know, keep being in their ear professionally. Mm-hmm. I think everything you do, you have to just be very kind. You know, everyone's so emotional. And if you're not being a kind person while doing it, it just makes it so much tougher. So really just be kind and do whatever you're doing with a smile. I think that's really important. And the persistence of it all, because, I mean, it's what it is. You have to just be persistent to get through it.
Yeah.
And then if you're confident and you're talented in what you're doing, the persistence is what will actually get you there.
As Will, Dave, and their Rec Philly team roll out their expansion plans, we here at Growing Greater will continue to admire and follow their approach to helping creators of all shapes and sizes realize their dreams. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to rate and review our podcast and share it with friends and colleagues and family and through social media too. Tune in to other episodes of Growing Greater at radio.com, wherever you listen to your podcast, and at selectgreaterphl.com/podcast. As we wrap up this episode of Growing Greater, the first episode of season 3, I want you to know that we could not do what we do every day without the active support from the team at Comcast. With proud roots firmly planted in Philadelphia, Comcast is a global media and technology company that has regional, national, and international reach. From Comcast Spectacor and Comcast Business to their incubator space known as Lift Labs and their new esports team, Philly Fusion, and their Internet Essentials program, Comcast's presence, it's authentic and engaging. The Comcast family of companies does so much more than just create and distribute some of the best in media, news, entertainment, and technology. They are driving and inspiring innovative solutions. And the professionals of Comcast, they also bring together leaders to foster positive change across the communities where they operate. Learn more at Comcast.com and join me in thanking Comcast for their support of our Growing Greater podcast. Growing Greater is presented by Select Greater Philadelphia, a council of our Chamber of Commerce for Greater Philadelphia. Select is the business attraction organization for Northern Delaware, Southern New Jersey, and Southeastern Pennsylvania, and helps to grow the economic vibrancy of our collective community by attracting new businesses and new jobs to our region. Special thanks to our program producers, Elena Carmazin and Maricela Juarez, along with the great team of marketing and creative services professionals at our chamber. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in anytime and anywhere you get your podcasts or online at selectgreaterphl.com/podcast.